With regional modeling, land atmosphere interactions in the South Asian monsoon regions, improving predictions of monsoon characteristics using innovative dynamic statistical modeling, and assessing impacts of climate variability and changes on water resources in India. So this has been kind of areas of his work, I'm sure, which most of it is going to be reflected today. He published over 80 research papers in some of the top journals. He was, of course, well decorated for his work. He is quite eminent in his field. He was awarded Swan Swarup Bhatnagar Prize in last year, 2019, in the Earth, Atmosphere and Planetary Sciences areas. He was also the recipient of Swarna Jayanti Fellowship. He got the Young Scientist and Engineer Awards from multiple apex bodies, both in science and engineering academies of India. And IIT Bombay too has honored him quite a few times for his research contributions and research experience. So we have very distinguished today speaker, and we very much look forward to hearing from you. This is an area probably we are not well informed. I hope this you will educate us on this topic.
Thank you very much for a kind introduction, and thank you very much Professor Satyanarayan and Professor Alok for inviting me to show what exactly what we are doing in this specific area of Indian monsoon. And today I have decided to focus more on land atmosphere feedback. So you know, when we talk about land atmosphere interactions, what comes to our mind is something like this: atmospheric process, lot of things are happening which are affected by large scale circulation. So let's say when you are talking about monsoon, we are only interested in what exactly is happening over El Nino Southern Oscillation. I mean, what exactly is happening in terms of El Nino Southern Oscillations, what exactly is happening over Indian Ocean, and that affects monsoon. And then because of monsoon, because of the rainfall pattern or because of the temperature pattern, how the land surface processes, which are essentially the hydrologic processes, the movement of water over land, how it is getting affected. So we are mostly interested in this part. But the other part is that land also contributes, or land also sends feedback to atmosphere, which are sort of neglected area in the monsoon science. Specifically because monsoon scientists really focus on the large scale processes, and while focusing on large scale processes, the signals which are coming out from land atmosphere feedback, that we do not really give attention to it. So we are just focusing on that part, and so we will start with a paper which came in Nature 2010. And it was the cover page of Nature 2010, where it was mentioned there are few real holes in climate science. And it was mentioned that the sad truth of climate science is that the most crucial variable is least well predicted. And one of the most crucial variable is, of course, precipitation, because that gives us water. Now, what they have pointed out, they have mentioned that there are four real holes in climate science where good amount of research work is necessary. And the first one is regional projections. So it talks about the local scale projections or local scale climate modeling. What does it mean by local scale climate modeling? When you are essentially modeling climate system, it actually we are kind of solving, you know, 2000 to 4000 partial differential equations which are coupled with each other. So it's a very complicated modeling framework, and you need lot of computing time. So you cannot really think of use the model for, let's say if you are going for a 100 year simulations or 200 year simulations, you cannot really think of running the model at a resolution of 1 kilometer or, you know, 5 kilometer or 10 kilometer. You have to run it at a resolution of 100 kilometer, 150 kilometer or 200 kilometer. And if you have to run that model at that kind of a coarse resolution, most of the local features doesn't get reflected in such a modeling framework. As for example, let's say if you go from Mumbai to Pune, you know, there is lot of rainfall variations. And because of Western Ghats and so on, it's actually 150 kilometer. So, but you are essentially getting within a grid just one rainfall value, and hence the regional characteristics are not properly reflected in a climate modeling, in a clean climate simulations. So regional projection is one of the challenge. For that, of course, you have to go for regional modeling. The second one is precipitation. Precipitation is one of the most complicated process because it happens at a very, very fine resolution. Let's say if you're talking about a convection that takes place, you know, at a resolution of few kilometers. So this is another one of the major problem. The third one is aerosol. How aerosol is essentially interacting with climate variables. What is essentially? It essentially talks about atmospheric chemistry. This is another gray area. And the fourth one is tree ring controversy, or these associated with paleoclimate. So these are essentially the four areas where things are not very clear, and a lot of research is really required to understand them. And among them, the first two are essentially associated with, you know, the most crucial variable, which is precipitation or rainfall. This is one of the most complicated tasks. Now, when it comes to Indian monsoon, it is even more complicated because monsoon is essentially the resultant of multiple different large scale and local scale factors, which themselves are very difficult to simulate. Let's say if you're talking about El Nino Southern Oscillations, which is one of the which influences monsoon like anything. Every year, if let's say if there is a El Nino Southern Oscillations, you will mostly get a drought year. But if you really need to model El Nino Southern Oscillations, there is no such model which can really simulate El Nino Southern Oscillations in a nice way. If you take the example of 2019, we were expecting that it will be an El Nino Southern Oscillation or El Nino year, but it didn't take place. Suddenly the temperature drops down over the Pacific, and because of which El Nino didn't take place. So, and because of that, what happened? Initially during June there was no rainfall, so we were expecting it will be a drought year, but El Nino didn't take place, and suddenly entire climate process gets changed and we started receiving very high rainfall, and it was a very surplus and wet kind of situation. So this kind of problems will come because monsoon, El Nino, Indian Ocean dipole moment, they are all very complex processes, and that makes it really challenging.
So is it post facto understood what happened in the 2019 monsoon?
Yes, so essentially
there is an understanding.
So essentially what happens, if you consider 2019 sea surface temperature, which is over the Nino 3.4 region, which is essentially the El Nino region, there was a increasing, the temperature was increasing, the sea surface temperature, which was an indication of El Nino kind of situation may take place. And when you give such a condition as an initial condition to your model, the model will predict as an El Nino year. So models were predicting El Nino year. As El Nino is actually, we can foresee that El Nino is, you know, coming, then at the same time model will also make a seasonal prediction, which is essentially a drought year. And this is what actually happened. But what happened, suddenly from June, the sea surface temperature dropped over the Nino 3.4 region. So El Nino disappeared. When El Nino disappeared, suddenly, you know, monsoon becomes very active because there was a drop in the sea surface temperature. So it pushed the cloud or the water circulation towards the South Asian region, and that results into heavy rainfall. It's almost a flood like situation. But after September, again El Nino kind of situation started coming. So sea surface temperature again started increasing. So essentially there is, you know, there was a kind of a oscillatory behavior of Nino 3.4 sea surface temperature, which is very unusual, and because of which, you know, monsoon prediction was actually wrong for this, and it was wrong by almost all the models. All the models have produced a wrong prediction of monsoon simply because your El Nino was the one of the main governing factor and it completely failed. So this is
Are you going to discuss, if you have finished with this question?
Yes.
Are you going to discuss the distinctions between all these factors, El Nino and dipole oscillations, and
I have not covered here, but
I don't think we know much about.
Okay, I'll briefly mention. So essentially El Nino means when you are talking about, so in the Pacific there is a zone, equatorial region, there is a zone that is known as Nino 3.4 region. So in this Nino 3.4 region, what happens from, let's say, March, April, the temperature keeps on rising during El Nino years. When I'm talking about this thing, I'm talking about during El Nino years, the temperature will keep on rising. When temperature keep on rising, in a very simple language, what it will try to do, it will try to pull the clouds or monsoon system towards its direction or towards itself. So what will happen? the monsoon gets weakened. When monsoon gets weakened, then we will receive a low rainfall. Remember, El Nino, the peak of El Nino occurs during December. So, it is essentially the co-evolution of monsoon and El Nino that takes place. So, when we see a, some kind of a increasing sea surface temperature during April, May, so the models will also start simulating a dry monsoon condition or dry rainfall condition over India. But what happens at the same time, there is something known as Indian Ocean Dipole Moment. So, Indian Ocean has west part and east part. So, when west part gets warmer, the east part gets cooler and so on. So, essentially it is known as dipole moment, hot and cold sea surface temperature. Now, let us say if you are considering a condition where from the east side the Pacific is trying to pull the clouds or pull the monsoon system, but at the same time the western side gets warmed up, the western Indian Ocean. So, it will not allow the El Nino to take out the entire monsoon system, and because of which we may not get a dry year. So, this is known as positive Indian Ocean Dipole Moment. So, if you have an El Nino year, but if you have a positive Indian Ocean Dipole Moment, then you may not get a dry year or you may not get a bad monsoon, it will be a good monsoon. And these two works together, but the interesting part is that Indian Ocean Dipole Moment peak occurs during September. El Nino peak occurs during December and monsoon is June to September. So, all of them co-evolve, they are actually co-evolving, and because of which is very, I mean we can use one as a predictor of other, but as they are co-evolving, so it is very difficult to model them together, and that is one of the major challenge for monsoon simulations. So, now the other part.
One more question.
Yeah. Yes. It is essentially land, it is essentially ocean atmosphere interactions, it is not just atmosphere, it is essentially ocean and atmosphere, it is essentially a coupled model, coupled ocean atmosphere model. Now, all the climate models, the major climate models are coupled atmosphere ocean model. At a weather scale only, we go for a atmospheric model, but let us say if you are going beyond weather scale, then you have to think of coupled atmosphere ocean modeling, because otherwise, you know, you cannot really go for a seasonal prediction. The other thing is that the weather, if you are just considering the atmospheric process, the memory, that weather, I mean the memory is quite low, it is just 7 days, but ocean has a long memory. So, if you consider a coupled atmosphere ocean model, you can take help of the ocean memory to get a better seasonal prediction, and that is why for if you are going beyond weather scale, let us say if you are going beyond month, if you are going for 4 months prediction or 5 months prediction like monsoon prediction, then you have to go for coupled atmosphere ocean modeling. Yes, yes, sure.
So, the ocean currents are really long duration currents.
Yes, yes.
You know, from, you know, if you have to go from northern Atlantic into southern Indian Ocean, and it takes, you know,
long
hundreds
time.
Of years.
Yes.
Maybe even 1000 years.
Yes.
So, if it is a current which is that long,
yes,
how is it that it is affecting monsoon or El Nino, which are happening which are happening, and you are trying to predict these things only on a basis of a year or so?
So, what you are mentioning is actually about the oceanic currents, which are actually long term processes. So, there are multiple processes which are happening in ocean. So, there are few processes which are happening at a very short scale. There are few processes which are actually taking a season kind of, I mean a year annual kind of scales. There are few processes which are going for multi-decadal scale. There are few processes which are even going for century scale. So, when you are talking about El Nino, these are actually affected by the processes which are actually happening for a temporal scale which is of 6 to 9 months. So, this is the way El Nino forms, and this again it has a periodicity of 3 to 4 years. So, every you can expect one El Nino in every 3 to 4 years. So, this is, and even we are not very sure even in the warming condition whether this El Nino frequency will increase or not. That is even that is actually an open question, because you know there are quite a number of nature and science paper where it was mentioned that El Nino will increase, the other group of people mentioned no, it will not increase and so on, but still it is an open question, there is no answer to it. So,
and is there a stratification in the sea level which actually affects time scales?
Exactly, exactly, exactly.
So, can you tell us a little bit about
So essentially, you know, if you are considering oceanic processes, there are different processes. So there is, you know, there is a subsurface, there is surface, there is subsurface, and there is deep ocean, and they have different kind of carbon budget and heat transfer equations. And at the same time, if you are considering surface, there are a lot of, you know, phytoplanktons, algae, they play a role, the salinity plays a role. And in the subsurface, the way it is coming from surface and also its temperature, it plays a role. And deep layer, different other biological, you know, units that play a role. So essentially all of them plays together, and that results into if you consider different thermal layers, they keep on changing, probably not at a daily scale but at a monthly scale, and this results into formation of El Nino kind of conditions and so on. So when the warm water comes, you know, near surface, then you can, and in a very layman's language, when warm water comes to surface in, you know, in the Pacific region, if Nino 3.4 region, that results into a warmer Nino 3.4. But at the same time, so it will look like this. The warmer, you know, interface will look like this. So essentially, if it goes upward here, it will go downward here. So it will result into this sort of condition. So here El Nino in El Nino condition, here the in the Nino 3.4 region, there will be a warmer sea surface temperature. Here it will be a cooler sea surface temperature. And this warmer sea surface, let's say India is here. This is the Pacific. This is Nino 3.4. It will try to pull the monsoon system. So India will not receive not a very good rainfall. And the challenging part is that they co-evolve. So it's not like that El Nino occurred during April, May, and we'll see the impact on monsoon during June to September. Actually, El Nino takes the peak during December. So that's another challenge. So using the co-evolving pattern, we try to model monsoon. Is this a? So now the other challenge is that's also many of the model have this problem, that is dry bias. So dry bias means some kind of a underestimation of monsoon rainfall over the Indian landmass. So if you are considering just over this region, Indian Ocean and Indian landmass, they are always in competition in getting good amount of precipitation, because the major source of moisture is this Indian Ocean. So they are always in competition. Now what happens when Indian landmass wins? Then we consider it as a good monsoon year. When Indian Ocean wins, it's actually a bad monsoon year compared to their average. It's not like Indian landmass wins means the rainfall actually is happening over Indian landmass, but if you consider the anomalies, in terms of anomalies, if Indian landmass wins, then we will mention it is a good rainfall year, and otherwise it's a bad rainfall year. But what is happening over, if you use a model, so if you're considering the present operational monsoon model of Ministry of Earth Science, which is Climate Forecast System version 2, which was taken from NCEP, National Center for Environmental Prediction, US, and they have done some more parameterization to represent monsoon in a better way. And even with that also, it was found that there is a huge dry bias. If you consider this, actually, you know, the yellow and red part, that shows the dry bias. So there is a huge underestimation of monsoon rainfall. So what the operational organization does, they consider over last 30 to 40 years, how did the model perform, and from there they find out the average error, the mean error, and they subtract that error or add that error. Here it is underestimation, so they add that error, add the difference to get the monsoon rainfall for next season. So essentially what they are considering, your error is fixed. So whatever bias is there, that is actually fixed. But actually what happens, this bias is actually a non-stationary quantity. But to simplify it, they consider it fixed in a crude statistical way, or it's not really a statistical way, it's essentially just finding out the differences and to get rid of the differences. And this is the way they try to, you know, improve the monsoon simulation and do the operational predictions and so on. But it was another, you know, open question, why there is such a dry bias where we are actually improving the ocean atmosphere interactions. So the models are actually performing quite well in terms of ocean atmospheric interactions. The ocean models, ocean modeling framework is actually taking care of the oceans very nicely, but still we are getting the dry bias. And this was another question which was not really answered properly. So this is something we thought of, you know, finding out that what exactly is this? Can we really answer these questions in terms of, let's say, moisture circulation or moisture transport? So this was one of the questions that was there.
And while working on that, what we have found is that this Indian monsoon rainfall also has a huge variability. If you are considering 2019 monsoon rainfall, which was a very, you know, very high rainfall year, even there also you can see a lot of red spots, which are actually deficit rainfall regions. So there is a huge spatial variability. And very interestingly, what we have found in 2012 paper, that there is an increase in such spatial variability. That means the rainfall over one region is becoming different from the rainfall over its neighboring region. So the spatial variability is increasing at a very high trend. There is a statistically significant increasing trend of spatial variability. And then we thought, why is it happening? Because if it is a product, if monsoon is the product of large scale circulation pattern, then the spatial variability should not increase at that high rate. There is something happening. And we hypothesize probably local factors are playing a major role, which we keep on neglecting them. So let's look into the local factors and try to find out if land has a feedback to atmosphere. And this land atmosphere feedback was actually neglected over, you know, Indian region. So we thought of, you know, exploring that part.
So what is the drive, you know, spatial resolution, is it still 150 kilometers?
No, this is with the observed data. This one is observed data. 50 kilometer resolution. So 50 kilometer gridded data is available, and now IMD has made 25 kilometer gridded data available. Even 25 kilometer also will find such a high increase of spatial variability. Even if you consider Mumbai, if you consider Mumbai rainfall, there is a huge spatial variability, and this actually we can experience. I mean, because sometimes I had to go to, you know, Powai region to the Navi Mumbai region. If you start from Powai, you will get heavy rainfall. In the Eastern Expressway, it is a very high rainfall. In Navi Mumbai, at the entrance of Navi Mumbai, it is not that high. In between Navi Mumbai, there is extremely high rainfall and so on. So there are certain pockets where the rainfall is very high. And if you remember 2005, during 2005 flooding condition, Colaba received 80 mm rainfall, where Santa Cruz received around 900 mm rainfall. So spatial variability is there. And very interestingly, even if you consider, I mean, in Mumbai it's happening, because we had a paper where I have shown that it's happening because of the urban morphology, urban structures and so on. But over a large region, if you consider, there also we are finding there is a high increase in spatial variability. So land factors are probably very important, but we keep on neglecting them. So considering that, what we are trying to hypothesize is that, let's say, if you improve the regional land surface representation and their contribution in terms of moisture transport in a monsoon model, then probably we can get rid of, I mean, we can improve the model simulations, or probably we can remove the dry bias, what we have seen, and which was not, I mean, which monsoon scientists could not able to take care. And when you are talking about moisture transport, we are talking about two sources. One is advective moisture transport, one is recycled. So advective means, let's say if you are considering a region, in that region the moisture is coming from outside, that is known as advective. And recycled means over that region rainfall is taking place, and vegetation and people are taking that water, and some evapotranspiration is going on, that again joins atmosphere and again gets precipitated. That is known as recycled precipitation. Some part of precipitation is getting recycled, and some are coming from advection, from outside. So we are talking about advective moisture and recycled moisture. Our target is to understand what is the proportion of recycled moisture or recycling proportion. This is known as recycling ratio. This is what we are trying to find out. So essentially, if you are considering the water cycle, this is essentially the evaporation that is coming from ocean, and this is very important. You can see the size of the arrow. This is very important. But what about land evaporation? The sizes are small, so we keep on neglecting. But what we are trying to find out, even if they are small, do they have the potential to affect the monsoon system? This was the idea. Do they really have some potential to affect the monsoon system? What are the, you know, contributions of land processes? So this is what we started, and for that what we did, we used the Lagrangian approach of classical computational fluid dynamics. So we have taken the atmospheric water budget equation. This is essentially the atmospheric water budget equation. Then we use the Lagrangian approach. Let us say precipitation is taking place over here. We want to track the moisture and find out its source, and then find out how much it is coming from its own region and how much it is coming from outside. and this was the target. So essentially in that way we have defined precipitation recycling, and the recycling ratio is the recycled precipitation to total precipitation. So essentially this is the advection that is coming, this is essentially the essentially precipitation is taking place over here, and this is the evapotranspiration is taking place. Out of this evapotranspiration, some of them again is getting precipitated, that is recycled precipitation, and rest is going out with some which also have some advective component. So this is what we tried to do. Now, which one? So these are essentially the different components. This is essentially moisture, amount of water, mass, I mean water multiplied by the velocity. So if you consider the recycled precipitation, I am just focusing on this one, the recycling ratio, that is the proportion of land evapotranspiration to total precipitation, and you can see here as monsoon progresses it becomes quite high over the Gangetic basin and the northeast region. So it actually tells us, you know, initially we should not expect very high recycling ratio simply because during June it is almost a dry condition. In a dry condition the evaporation is quite low, but as soon as the soil gets recharged, the vegetation becomes more green, they do lot of photosynthetic activities, they release evapotranspiration, and your recycle component keeps on increasing, and it reaches around 20% over the Gangetic basin, which is essentially the cropped region as well as northeast region. So northeast region and the Gangetic basin and part of northern India, the recycling ratio is very high, it's around 20 to 25%, and this is very important because Indian monsoon has a variability of only 10%, and you can now consider that 25% of the monsoon rainfall during the end of monsoon is coming from the land sources, which is a significant amount. So we mentioned that, you know, of course oceanic processes initiates the monsoon rainfall, but it is getting sustained because of the land processes. So once we have this kind of plot, this was done by one of my PhD student Amay Pathak, who is now assistant professor at IIT Kharagpur. Then what he did, he further considered different regions. So this is essentially the Gangetic basin. What we have found is that Gangetic basin has a very high recycling ratio. So we focused on Gangetic basin. It is a theoretical. It's not a measurement.
So, large part of the Wikipedia graphic that you show.
Yes.
Then comes up through the soil.
Yes.
How do you model that very accurately unless you know details of how much is actually coming through the groundwater?
So essentially when you do this modeling, we take care of the entire, so when you, what you are talking about, what is coming from Himalayan and is going like this. So this this is essentially the routing model, this is essentially the river flow, but what we are interested in the natural process, like we are not really considering that, you know, if we are taking that water from there and do the irrigation and so on, at this moment we are not considering irrigation or anything. What we are considering is that rainfall is occurring over a region and some part joins atmosphere and rest of them results into runoff, and that runoff again joins the stream flow.
But isn't that very critically dependent on exactly what model there is of greenery and plant growth?
Yes, everything is concerned.
How are you putting that in?
Yes, in the from the satellite data we can get. Yes.
So, if you cannot measure the precipitation, what is it?
Recycling precipitation.
Versus the inflow, which is coming through either through groundwater supply or river supply. Then how do you know which one is dominant?
No, we are not measuring. What we are trying to do, so I'll tell you. So there are certain methodologies. So essentially, you cannot have monitoring. You cannot have isotope experiment to really understand what exactly is happening. Of course, in PRL, there are a few scientists who are doing the isotope experiment to validate these results. But what we can do is that there are a lot of satellite measurements which are available, and at the same time, there are a lot of international networks and national networks. They monitor a lot of things. So what we normally do, we take those data, assimilate that in a model, which is known as reanalysis. So it is not essentially the observed, but it is the proxy to observed, which is known as reanalysis data set. And we perform the analysis on this reanalysis data set. So it is not essential, it is not possible to really measure and do it. It is impossible because you cannot set up, you know, thousands, 10,000 flux towers in a country. So it is impossible. But what you can do essentially is that you can have a satellite measurements, and those satellite measurements you can feed into the model, force the model to run in a similar way the observed variables are seen, which is known as reanalysis, or it is known as data assimilation. And after this data assimilation, you analyze that product and then apply your, you know, Lagrangian approach to understand the sources. So this is the way in climate science it is being modeled. Is that so now let's say if you are considering this, sorry for the low font size. So essentially we are focusing on just few regions which are very important. Now we are starting with Western Indian Ocean. So it is essentially Western Indian Ocean or Arabian Sea. So Arabian Sea, you can see during the June month the contribution is very high. That's expected because during June the huge moisture that comes from Arabian Sea to the Indian landmass. And if you consider July, August, it keeps on reducing, and September is quite low over Indian region. Now if you are considering the upper Indian Ocean, which is the Bay of Bengal, it remains almost constant during June to September. If you are considering the Southern Indian Ocean, so Southern Central Indian Ocean, so it peaks during July and August, but during June and September it is not that high. And this is what is Gangetic Basin. And the Gangetic Basin, what we can find is that it becomes high during September. During June, July, August, this essentially red and yellow, but it becomes slightly bluer during September. So Gangetic Basin keeps on increasing till September. Now what is its impact? Let us try to understand. Let us try to understand what is actually happening during a good rainfall year and a bad rainfall year. So when you are talking about high rainfall years, so essentially these are, this black one is the total rainfall, which is given, the scale is here, and these are essentially recycled precipitation, and the blue one is the oceanic contribution, and the yellow one is the recycled precipitation. Now we can see in a good rainfall year, initially the oceanic contribution is quite high. When the oceanic contribution, it is a composite, it is not, you cannot really generalize each and every year's conditions with this one. So this is a kind of a composite which tells us during June, if you have a good oceanic contributions, recycle component will keep on increasing. At the end it will help you to sustain the monsoon. But in a bad year, what is happening, your oceanic contributions are low, but still the soil gets recharged. So your recycle contribution will keep on increasing, but after certain point of time it cannot really sustain because your soil does not have that much of moisture. So it drops, when evapotranspiration drops, the entire monsoon system drops. So essentially it cannot sustain and you will have a early withdrawal, and this is sort of a normal year. So essentially what we can show here is that it is not just oceanic contribution, land contribution also plays a major role, which we keep on neglecting. So the next question is that if you now have a improved representation of land, then will that improve the monsoon simulation or not? So this is of course the next question which will come, and this is what we tried to do. Before that also we would like to mention the other thing, is not only the mean condition, even for the extreme condition, what we have found is that if you consider, so we know that over central Indian region the extreme precipitation has increased quite significantly. And what we tried to do, we again use the same methodology and we tried to find out what is happening. What we have found is that land is the second highest contributor to the central Indian extreme rainfall. The highest one is of course Arabian Sea, and the second highest is essentially the land contribution. So land is playing a major role, but it was neglected. So what we wanted to do is that we tried to improve the land representation, and we will try to find out if that really improves the monsoon simulation or not. Yes, so essentially what I, now again we will go back to that, more, you know, to that figure.
If that is the case, why Northeast India not subject to extreme weather, you know, you mentioned.
Yes, no, here we are just focused on the central India, so we have not really focused on the Northeast region. So we are taking up the composites where we received very high rainfall over the north, over the central India. The reason behind considering the central India is that in 2006, Professor B. N. Goswami wrote a paper in Science where he has shown that central India, the extreme rainfall has increased quite significantly. And what we wanted to find out, and what he has mentioned, is that even it is a homogeneous region, there is not much of orography over this region, but even there also extreme rainfall is increasing quite significantly. So what we wanted to find out, what is the reason behind it, what are the different contributors of moisture over this. So we are not really focused in this work over the northeast region, so we are just focusing on extreme days of central India. So now again we are going back to that figure where we have mentioned that there is a dry bias by CFSB2 or climate forecast system version 2 simulations. Now let us say if you are considering a reanalysis data set which is a proxy to observed data set and the model data set. So you can see this is the starting of the year and this is the monsoon part. Essentially it is the intertropical convergence zone. So if you remember in geography you have read it, the in between in the equator the two wind normally converges and because of which we receive heavy rainfall over the equatorial region. And when sun moves north during summer, the entire intertropical convergence zone or high rainfall band goes northward, and when sun moves south, it moves southward. So during the monsoon season, the June to September, this entire intertropical convergence zone moves northward and we can get a heavy rainfall. But in the model what is happening, you can see this intertropical convergence zone is not really moving northward. This deep blue band is not happening in the model. So it is actually over the ocean only, Indian Ocean, it is not going towards Indian landmass. And because of which what is the problem is that we are getting a dry bias. So we are trying to understand if something can be improved. So what we did here, we are specifically focusing on Gangetic basin because we got a huge data set of Gangetic basin of soil moisture, of different other hydrologic property data. So we focused on Gangetic basin where we have a better land representation, and also we have provided a better elevation model from Himalayas. So we considered this region. So this is essentially a larger region, regional modeling framework, and this is another nested model. So one is at 27 kilometer, one is at 9 kilometer. We ran the model, and these are essentially the IMD data, and this is another product. So this was the original product where there was huge dry bias. Now you can see, now we have used two different land models. So what we did in the land representation, we essentially used a coupled land atmosphere model where land is coupled with no atmosphere. Previously only ocean was coupled with atmosphere. Now ocean atmosphere coupled output we have considered it as a boundary condition, and then ran a land atmosphere coupled model. And there what we are finding is that you can see that over Gangetic basin the dry bias has actually reduced quite significantly. It is very close to zero. There is a huge error minimization over the Gangetic basin. Even we changed that, so we wanted to make sure that it is not happening just because if you are using a specific land model, and because the land model has a some kind of parameterization or some kind of equations because of which it is getting removed, but it is not a generalized one. So we want to make sure that it is a generalized one. So we used another land model, we found exactly the same thing, this dry bias is actually getting removed. So then we thought of and this is happening with any kind of data product whatever we have. So we checked with multiple data product and everywhere we are getting the same thing. If you improve the land, your monsoon simulation is getting improved. Then we wanted to find out what exactly is happening. So essentially this is the CFSV2 and this is the year is essentially the proxy to observed data or reanalysis data set. So this is essentially the this is what we are getting from the observed data, and this is what we are getting from the model, and there is a huge error. And you can see this is the total, the green one is essentially the what is coming from ocean and the red one which is coming from land. And you can see that there is not only bias in the land contribution, there is also bias in the ocean contributions even after lot of improvements in the ocean modeling in a coupled land ocean model. But then when we applied this land model, what we are finding, of course the recycled precipitation component has improved quite significantly. You can see in both the modeling cases the recycled component has improved, but at the same time what we have found is that oceanic contribution has also improved. So this was kind of a very puzzling thing, because we can expect that land contribution will improve because we have a better land representation, we have better hydrologic representation, we are considering all the hydrologic or land processes, so recycled precipitation will definitely improve. But why oceanic contributions are actually improving? Is it really a magic or something is happening? So we are confused. Then when we tried to find out what we have,
this part of your modeling?
Yes, ocean we are considering the sea surface temperature. sea surface temperature is a kind of a forcing data set to the model. So then what we are finding is that, so it is nothing but a better representation of Himalaya. So in a large scale model, what we are considering 50 kilometer, 100 kilometer resolution model, where Himalaya is not represented well. When Himalaya is not represented well, what is happening? We know tropical region is warmer and extratropical region is cold. So what is happening? From the extratropical region, cold air is actually entering into the Indian landmass, and that will not allow Indian landmass to increase its temperature. Now if you consider this local scale monsoon, what is happening? Your land gets warmer compared to ocean, and because of which ocean to land the moisture flow starts. But what is happening in CFSV2 simulation, you can see here this is kind of very cold compared to any of these things. If you consider observed and this you consider the CFSV2, it is quite cold because the, you know, because essentially lot of wind actually coming from the extratropical region to the tropical region, and that does not allow the Indian landmass to increase its temperature, and because of which the land ocean thermal contrast is not actually increasing and monsoon is not taking place in a proper way. So entire monsoon rainfall is getting precipitated over this region, it is unable to enter the Indian landmass. But when we have a better representation of Himalaya, the cold air from extratropical region is not actually entering, and because of which what is happening, you still get a warm, I mean you are actually getting a warmer condition, which is a summer condition, and because of which you are actually getting a good monsoon rainfall. And this is the way, it is not only the land contribution but also ocean contribution is getting improved by improving your land representation. So then once we have this, then we thought, okay fine, what we have considered is now it is a completely natural condition where we are not considering the human intervention or the way vegetation reacts to climate. So essentially if you are considering the hydroclimatic system, it is going through some variability and change, and you know what plant will do, let us say if it is a dry kind of dry kind of condition, the plant will try to adapt to it by, let us say if it is a drought condition, plant will reduce its leaf area to reduce the water release through evapotranspiration, and when the evapotranspiration gets reduced it will have a feedback. So this is an under natural condition, and even we are considering a constant sort of a land use land cover or constant leaf area. Now let us say now human interference is taking place, human is giving irrigation, then what will happen? Because of human irrigation, still the plant will get lot of water, so it will react in a different way, it will not really reduce its leaf area over certain regions, not all over, because 60% is still rain fed over India, and that will have a different kind of feedback. So this feedback also gets affected by human behavior. So the idea is that, can we really quantify, understand this human behavior and the feedback of this human behavior in terms of irrigation to the monsoon system? So it is a kind of a tricky thing, because it is difficult to believe that, you know, when human changes its water management policy over land, that will also have a feedback to Indian monsoon system. But our idea was that if you are considering the monsoon system, it is not just atmosphere, it is about atmosphere, land, ocean, everything. It's essentially there are a lot of subcomponents which are there in each of the sphere of hydrosphere, biosphere, atmosphere and so on, and if there is a perturbation in any of the component, this perturbation gets propagated to the entire system, and that may have impact. So we want to, and this is what we are thinking, because if you are considering the Indo-Gangetic basin where the irrigation is quite high, irrigation activities are very high, and Indo-Gangetic basin is another area where the land atmospheric feedback is also quite high. So we thought of, okay let us see what is happening. So this was done one of my student Anjana. So what we tried to do, we tried to find out the irrigation condition. So before that I need to mention is that, you know, many of the models which are available, so they do not consider irrigation, most of the models do not consider irrigation. There are only very few modules that consider irrigation, and that irrigation is considered like this: when your soil moisture goes below permanent wilting point, then you start irrigating and it will reach the field capacity. So permanent wilting point means the point below which the plant cannot really extract water, and field capacity means maximum amount of water the soil can retain. but what is happening over Indian landmass, specifically over the Indo-Gangetic basin, we did some, you know, interviews with some of the farmers, and we thought what we have realized is that nobody really follows weather forecast, nobody really does soil moisture monitoring because they don't have money to do that. So what they do is that whenever they have some access to diesel or some electricity, they do groundwater pumping and over flood, I mean it is a flood irrigation, and they make it over flooded condition so that the soil gets enough water, and while doing such thing lot of water is get wasted. So that is a different thing, but the idea here is that what will be the feedback of such processes. Let us say if you have a irrigation module which is available from the western countries which have already been developed, and that considers a controlled irrigation, but Indian condition is uncontrolled irrigation. Secondly, the paddy irrigation has not been considered in any of the model, but in India in the Gangetic basin majority, one of the major crop is actually paddy. In paddy you have to keep it submerged condition, so it is a pond like situation where evaporation is going on as well as transpiration is going on. It is an entirely different condition. So we need to consider all of these things. Now if you are considering the irrigation fraction, you can see the Indo-Gangetic basin as a huge irrigation, and this is essentially groundwater fed. So what we wanted to do is that we perform three simulations. One is no irrigation, absolutely no irrigation. The second one is most realistic irrigation condition, that is what is happening over India, where we have paddy irrigation, we have collected census data, we have collected literature, there is a huge data collection which we have done, and we developed the irrigation map for India for this 24 years. And then the third one is the idealistic irrigation, that is when controlled irrigation, when soil moisture goes below permanent wilting point, you irrigate it, reach the field capacity and stop. And this is something which will give you the idea how much water is getting wasted. This is a huge water, this is being wasted over the in the Gangetic basin. And this is the way, I am not going into details. So it is a very brief representation of in the way we have added a module which takes care of the Indian irrigation condition and the paddy field in the community land model, and then this product is now online available by us. So we used a new plant functional type and we have added it to the module, and this can now take care of the Indian condition. Now when we applied this, what is actually happening is something like this. So this is essentially irrigation minus control, and this is the idealistic condition minus control. So irrigation minus control, we are focusing on September because September the land atmosphere feedback is very high. We are finding that your heavy rainfall band actually shifts towards northwest. But if you are considering the ideal irrigation condition, it is actually happening over central India. And very interestingly, if you consider the observed condition, you will find over September actually the rainfall has a slight increasing trend over this region. So this is quite consistent with the observed data, which was we are very happy after seeing this. Now this is happening something like this. So if you are having a high irrigation, what is happening, this moisture transfer actually tries to bypass that part because there is a evaporative cooling, and it will go to northwest, but it is not happening when there is a less amount of irrigation, and because of which actually this kind of shift is not taking place. And then we checked it, we have found is that this is actually not only the evaporative cooling, but it also it is also associated with some sort of instability that is being formed. And we are finding the major instability is actually forming over the northwest because of the equivalent potential temperature. Still it is not very clear why lot of instability is actually forming over this region, but this is actually consistent with the observed data. We are still, you know, analyzing these outputs, but the initial finding is that it is actually happening, and observed data is quite consistent with this result. So that says that even if you change your irrigation management policy over the north in the Gangetic basin, because that has a huge land atmosphere feedback, so that results into, you know, that has the potential to change the monsoon rainfall pattern and the spatial pattern, and this is very important. Now the other part is, as I was mentioning, that I have mentioned about irrigation, the other part is that vegetation keeps on changing because of climate condition. So let us say in a dry year the vegetation will have a low leaf area, in a wet year it will have a high leaf area, and so on. So if you consider the leaf area index of vegetation, which is a satellite derived product, so this is essentially the mean, the dark green is actually the mean, and these are for different years over last 15 years, and you can see this sort of variability is there in the vegetation leaf area. And what we consider in a modeling framework is that we consider this climatology, we only consider this climatology. So the idea for climatology means the average condition. So the idea here is that what is the feedback of this dynamic vegetation to the interannual variability of monsoon rainfall. Till now we have not touched the interannual variability. What I was mentioning about the bias in mean rainfall. Now what we have started looking into it is that if there is a interannual variations of this vegetation, how it will affect the interannual variability of monsoon rainfall. So what we did, again we have considered the WAF CLM simulations where we have considered two cases. One is constant LAI cases, constant leaf area index case, what is varying leaf area index case, and we are trying to compare what exactly is happening. And once we have the simulations, we wanted to analyze it with a information theory based approach which is based on Shannon's entropy. With Shannon's entropy we tried to develop a complex network and we are trying to understand what exactly is happening. So let us say this is the Indian region, these are all 7 regions we have considered. Now we first computed the correlation coefficient of interannual variation. So what we are finding is that, you know, if you are considering a constant LAI, you are getting a correlation coefficient of 0.5 something, and if you are considering a varying LAI, the correlation jumps to 0.65 or 0.7. So yes, interannual variations of vegetation actually have impacts on interannual variation of monsoon rainfall. Hence, if you are varying the LAI, your monsoon simulations is improving at interannual scale. That means year to year variation is getting improved in the simulations, and it is happening almost all the regions except Jammu and Kashmir, because Jammu and Kashmir we do not have a very good data set, and also in southern India it is quite less because it considers majority of the Tamil Nadu region, which is essentially the northeast monsoon affected. We are only considering the southwest. But in almost all the regions what we are finding is that if you start giving a dynamic vegetation input, then your monsoon simulation gets improved at an interannual scale. So we wanted to find out, is it model artifact or there is some process behind it. So to understand that, what we tried to do, we have tried to find out in terms of entropy. So entropy is essentially the measure of uncertainty or variability. So we are interested in two things. One is the mutual information. Mutual information means the entropy that is being shared by two variables in real time. So that means in real time what is their connections, but it does not have a direction because it is happening at t equal to t. So but at the same time we also find out the transfer of entropy. Transfer of entropy tells you what fraction of xt plus 1 is not explained by xt but is explained by some other variable y at t, t minus 1, t minus 2 and so on. And this information will tell you why, how, what kind of information, what is the amount of information that y sends to x. That means y is a cause of x, in what way y sends information to x. This is the idea. So essentially it is a network. So if you are developing a network based on mutual information, it will only tell you the mutual, it will be talking about the real time interactions, but it will not tell you which one causes the other. And if you are talking about transfer entropy based links, so essentially we are developing a network something like this. When it is a transfer entropy based link, then it will tell you which one causes the such a change and what is the memory associated with it, what is the number of days memory that is associated with it. So we developed a network for all the regions. We have considered the variables like temperature, precipitation, LAI, albedo, the evapotranspiration, the soil moisture. We have considered all the variables, all the 7 regions, and we developed a complex network. So this is based on transfer entropy because we wanted to find out the causes. And we picked up the land variables, which are albedo, evapotranspiration, soil moisture and leaf area index. These are essentially 4 land variables, and we tried to find out what are the number of links that is coming out of these land variables. And you can see there are quite all the links other than the sky blue color, they are essentially coming from only these 4 variables. So there are total 11 variables, 10 variables which we have considered for each of the region, and these 4 variables are highlighted. The links that is coming out from the land variables are actually highlighted, and you can see there is a quite a huge number of links that is coming out of this land variables. That shows that the variability of land affects the eco-hydro climatological network of Indian monsoon region, and this makes a huge that is a very important conclusion. And then what we have found is that now we checked what is actually happening over drought years and what is actually happening over the surplus years. Now what you can find is that from the visual representation you can find is that during drought years they are actually more dense, but in surplus years they are not that dense. Then we check the number of transfer entropy links. What we are finding is that drought years the number of transfer entropy links are quite high. Then we checked actually the recycled precipitation component also. The recycling ratio is quite high during drought years because oceanic contributions drops during the initial phases. So if you are considering June to September, only during September the recycled component will be less in a bad year. But if you remember during June, July, August the recycled component almost be similar to the mean condition. So what is happening during drought year, this land component plays a huge role in maintaining the ecohydroclimatological network system. But that is not happening over surplus year. Surplus year is a standard condition. It doesn't, it is not going through a stress. So if you are considering the huge network, it is not going through stress. But under stress, then land contributions becomes very active, then they play a major role in maintaining the network or in sustaining the monsoon system. So this is what we have found. These are very recent results what we have found. So the next step is to, yes, we need to understand the resilience of this system under stresses. So only thing what we have found is that how the network behaves, we get some idea, but we have to really understand the resilience of the system under changing environment. That is one of the challenging part, and this is what we have to understand. So I was reading one of the paper by Schaeffer et al. In Science, where he was mentioning if you consider a single variable under stress it will look like this, but if you consider a network it works in a different way, because when it is under stress there will be some perturbation, but the others will not allow these variables to be affected too much by this perturbation through these links. But at some point of time the entire network cannot sustain it, so there will be a sudden drop. And once there is a sudden drop, if it has to go back to its original condition, then it will be difficult simply because there is a fall. And then entire system, all the nodes have to then go back to its original state, which is difficult. So it is the resilience of the entire network of all the nodes which is actually more difficult than this kind of thing. And actually our climate system is this one, so we need to consider this kind of thing. And then I will just point another one. So the future, then there was another paper in PNAS by Stephen et al. Where it was mentioned, we are going through different conditions, Holocene, Anthropocene and so on. And we are actually very, very close to a planetary threshold. So what Stephen et al. Has mentioned, well, we are now in this condition, but after certain, the way we are actually emitting greenhouse gases, if it will continue like this, it will probably cross the tipping point, and when it crosses the tipping point, then it cannot really come back to its original condition, even if you stop emitting the greenhouse gases. And he has mentioned is that hothouse earth condition. And what he has mentioned is that if you are in hothouse earth condition, then coming back to its original condition, your feedback becomes very important, exactly what Schaeffer et al. Has mentioned. So when it goes like this, then it is very difficult to come back because it is a network system. And here he has mentioned, not in terms of network, but he mentioned that then land feedback and biosphere feedback will become very important, and we have to change them in such a way so that we can come back, and which is one of the most challenging tasks. So the point here is that of course we can adapt to the changes what is happening, but if you don't stop, if you are not going for a green technology, then the problem is that the greenhouse emission will keep on continuing, and then if you cross the tipping point, then it's a challenging task to come back. We are actually avoiding unavoidable. But avoiding unmanageable will be really difficult. So we have to do avoiding unmanageable through a mitigation options. So just to conclude, I'm not giving a summary, but I'll just mention that I always feel that I always believe that components of our system are connected through links, and if there is any perturbation in any of the component, it gets propagated in the entire network, and they are either through forcing or through feedback. So just considering atmosphere, biosphere, hydrosphere separately will not give you the solution. If you really need to understand the process, you need to consider all of them together through either network based approach or through a coupled modeling approach. So thank you. So they are all my students who taught me all of this what I have presented, and these are my few collaborators. Thank you. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you.
So, so it's there is no answer. People, I mean, still scientists, you know, debating among themselves. But there is no specific way to define tipping point. That's the one of the challenging tests. People know that if it crosses. So, I know there is a very nice example. If you consider a small example, something like this. I don't have it, but there's a very nice paper which mentions. So let's say there is a forest region. If you consider Amazon region, what exactly is happening over Amazon region? So Amazon region, lot of rainfall is taking place, and majority of the rainfall is actually recycled precipitation because it's a very dense forest. But there is a lot of deforestation which is taking place, and because of deforestation, the recycle component reduces. So rainfall reduces. As the rainfall reduces, this is all not only over the deforested region, but the regions which are not even touched. Those regions also rainfall has reduced. So forest started declining. So there is a so the feedback process again gets changed. So it's not the feedback of the deforested region, even feedback from the untouched region also gets declined. In that way, actually, if it crosses a situation where forest almost, I mean, the forest condition will be really bad, then there will be no recycled precipitation. Then it will be almost a dry condition. So which you want to avoid?
So my question is related to this, but I'm trying to understand what is the spatial scale where something which has happened, let's say leaf cover had decreased because Amazon forest burning, or you know, in Australia there were wildfires. So what is the kind of spatial scale that can affect us here? You know, can, for example, India be affected by faraway Amazon or faraway Australia? And what is the scale of things that will?
It depends on the circulation patterns that is associated with over that region. I mean, the processes which are there over this region. Let's say if you are considering the Indian monsoon condition, so we are not very sure if it you know, Australian fire will really affect Indian monsoon or not. Of course, lot of experimental studies can only mention that. The it depends. But let's say if there is a huge burning over one of the major forests in India, or let's say the cropped, we suddenly, convert the entire agricultural land to an industrial land over the entire Indo-Gangetic basin. That will have a huge impact. So we need to understand the processes. Otherwise, it's very difficult to mention, you know, at what spatial scale which one will be affected and so on. So, so it's a it's a difficult question to answer. At this moment, I don't have an answer to this.
Are you sensitive, or can you sensitively determine which regions would preferentially have a larger impact? See, geography feeding back with evapotranspiration, so that you are in a position to predict, okay, if you did something in this region, it would have this kind of an effect.
Yes.
And which is good for you, and in so other region, it's bad for the monsoon.
Yes, so we have found that if you are considering the Indo-Gangetic basin, that is Indo-Gangetic basin and the northeast India, these are the regions where if you change the land use land cover.
So let's Indo-Gangetic, you consider one module
holistically.
I'm saying chop it up and ask.
We haven't really checked, but using a recycled precipitation concept, it's possible to check. But when you are going for a smaller region, sometimes the signal gets cancelled because essentially you are considering in a large framework, but it's possible to check.
So in some sense, with probably greater refinement, you might be in a position
exactly
to guide
exactly
agricultural patterns, cropping patterns and so on.
Exactly.
Early or late 90s, there was a huge drought in the northern Africa.
Yes.
At that time, it was mentioned that that time people knew that if you have a more tree, then that will be your rainfall will increase. But there they put more eucalyptus tree. Eucalyptus tree even repel the repel the rain. So I said that this thing was known that time, but you are mentioning that in the model, usually people
Yeah, the problem is that, you know, when that was the problem. So essentially what you are mentioning, it's kind of a practicing knowledge, and this was and if you are considering the atmospheric scientists who are monsoon scientists, they were not really bothered about what is actually happening over land. So they are more focused on what is happening over the ocean and over what is happening over the atmosphere. They are more interested in actually coupling atmosphere to ocean processes, and in that process that land gets neglected. The second one was that, you know, till 2000 there was no large scale land models. So the concept of large scale land models, so what people are interested, if you are considering a small basin, small river basin, in that way there were some conceptual models of, you know, hydrologic simulations and so on. But this whole sort of, you know, new generation large scale hydrologic model over a larger continent at a global scale, this concept came in 2000, around 2000. So then the hydrologic modeling people have started looking into it, and atmospheric modelers were not really interested in, you know, considering a proper land model, rather they are considering in a very crude framework, like this much of precipitation is coming and this much evapotranspiration is taking place, and that was even badly simulated. So that was one of the problems. So it was the modeling people who really understood, you know, land is important, but, you know, it's not properly used in a simulation.
Okay, I think there are no more questions. So let us once again thank